You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back to the first show of a brand new year. It's Saturday evening, January 1st, and we are going to kick another year of broadcasting off with a bang tonight, our first show. And our first guest of this new year is the one and only Nick Griffin, former member of European Parliament, lifelong advocate and effective activist for our people, one of our great spokesmen. He's joining us live from London this New Year's night Well, we're going to have a great hour. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but first, prospects for the coming year, current trends in Europe. Let's start there. Nick, Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Happy New Year, James. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Especially so, I think, tonight. We wanted a great guest to start things off for us, and I appreciate you leading the parade. And every time we have you on the program, it's great radio. Tonight will be no different. So let's just start with what I just mentioned, if you don't mind. Prospects for the coming year. This is a time of year, of course, where we're all hopeful and we have a brand new slate of prospects and possibilities. Where do you see our people going over the course of the next 12 months?
Well, it'd be wonderful, wouldn't it, to say this year will be better than last year. But I suspect it may not be. I think there's hard times coming, James, in all sorts of ways. But hard times are trying times, they're exciting times, and they're times in which good men and good women can make a difference. So it's not something to be frightened of, it's something to be grasped with both hands.
You said something that I remember, it wasn't even in a recent appearance, it could have been even a couple of years ago, but you said something that has stuck with me ever since I heard you speak it. And we were talking about, really, I guess, a common theme here, prospects for our people. And you said, and I'll paraphrase, I don't know the exact quote, but I'm going to stand pretty close to it, that the time for political solutions may be past, but that doesn't mean that the time has passed for our people. In other words, political solutions may not be reasonable right now or a reality, but our people still have a future. How can they have that future, Nick?
Well, you can look at Ireland and the obviously, I expect most of your listeners are aware that there's really two nations in the island of Ireland. There's the Protestants in part of the north, and there's the Catholics in the rest. And for 300, now forget which side you're on. That's not what I'm talking about here. Just think of it in these terms. For 300 years, the Protestants were the minority in the whole of the island of Ireland when it was ruled by the British. They were still a minority, and that didn't stop them having a wonderful cultural vibrancy, having their own identity, keeping their community together, being in a very effective community in religious, cultural, social, political, and economic terms. And then from 1922 onwards, they were a majority in the new state of Northern Ireland, and now they've just switched for demographic reasons to being a minority again. So for the last 450 years, these people have been a minority for all but 80 years. And that's where we white people all over the world now face being, a minority, even in our own homelands. And there's this terrible tendency amongst the hardcore white nationalists to sort of say, well, we become a minority and it's all over. And as I say, just look at Northern Ireland and the Protestant minority have kept their identity. And they've, in fact, they've been stronger when they've been a minority. They've been stronger when they've been persecuted. And so there's a great deal to be learnt then. And even if you're going to be a minority, it doesn't mean you're going to be exterminated. It doesn't mean you're going to go away. In fact, I think the one thing that minority status will do for our people, wherever they are, is to beat liberalism out of them. And because it's liberalism that is the core problem, then the quicker we become a minority in a strange way, the better, because our people will have to stand up, organise, and stop thinking in terms of I, me, and start thinking about us and acting like that.
Nick, this is Keith Alexander. Great to have you back on the show.
Hello, Keith. Great to speak to you again.
Well, let me ask you this. Everybody was very hopeful on this side of the pond when Brexit happened. And then, likewise, I think the rest of the world was hopeful, at least people that thought like us, when Trump was elected. But in both situations, it's an example of the old saying that we have here in the South, that when all is said and done, more will be said than done. Do you think that there is any reason to believe that we might be poised to make a great leap forward in our movement in England, in Europe, or in America during the coming year?
If you're talking politically, I'd say no. You know, the elite have got things so well stitched up. And even if, we could see a significant populist backlash against when they move on from using COVID as the excuse for their great reset to using climate change and carbon and so on for the excuse, we're going to see a great deal of resistance to that, just as we see a great deal of resistance in places where the white population are becoming a minority and so on, resistance amongst parents especially to the poison being taught to their children in schools and on the television and things like that. We'll see a period of great resistance, but really the liberal elite have got the whole political system sewn up. And we've seen it time and time again already in Europe, in Greece, in Slovakia, now in Italy. The minute they actually feel really threatened by a genuine nationalist political insurgency, they simply make it illegal. They simply ban political parties as a threat to democracy. And unless you're the one thing, of course, the Americans have, which nowhere in Europe has, that you're still an armed people. But for the rest of us, if you're not armed, unless you're in a position where you've got so much support that you can make the whole state ungovernable, unless the government does what you say, then the government and therefore the political elites will walk all over you. And I think that is the case in political terms, also in the United States, actually, because the amount, as I'm sure you know, the amount of money you have to really be a serious player in main elections, it's so enormous that there is no possibility of our people, sadly, gathering that amount of money together in the shortness of time which we've got left as a majority when we can win through the ballot box. So I'd simply say, don't worry about it. Forget about that. Yep. Because the minute you stop worrying about fighting battles you can't win and worrying about how you're going to save millions and millions of people from their own stupidity, quite bluntly, the minute you stop worrying about those things and you start to think about your affairs, your soul, your family, your immediate community, the people who think like you, then you have the energy and the urgency to actually get on and do things in real life for your own family and for your own community. And that is where the future
lies. Let me make this observation, if I could, Nick. There seems to be an irony almost to it. It's like we do better when we're not in charge. When the left is in charge, they awaken our people.
Well, we see that going on here in America, I think, to an extent under the first year of the Biden regime. And we'll talk about that more as we go forward. Nick, to your point, I am as hopeful as I've ever been. We're going to win. I'm not even thinking about anything else. I don't know how. I don't know what will be the catalyst for our great awakening. But I am a happy warrior, and I'm made happier tonight, this first night of 2022, to be talking to my old friend Nick Griffin. We'll be right back with him.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
For decades, leftists, liberals, socialists, and feminists have been screaming and crying, "My body, my choice," in order to justify the premeditated murder of innocent children in the womb. However, this is a fallacious argument, since science has proven and demonstrated that the baby has a separate set of DNA from the mother. If it's not your DNA, it's not your body. That is science, and you should trust the science. Remarkably, the same people who have been claiming "my body, my choice" for decades now want to force you to inject foreign substances into your body against your will. Obviously, they never cared about "my body, my choice." They just wanted to control you and have permission to kill babies. I am Ammon Bundy, and when you elect me governor of Idaho, I will sign an executive order on day one of my governorship prohibiting abortion in the state of Idaho. Because premeditated murder of the innocent should never be legal anywhere in the world, especially Idaho.
Paid for by Ammon Bundy for governor. VoteBundy.com.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Love that version of Auld Lang Syne, the cadence to it, the martial feel to it. Happy New Year again, everybody. So pleased and privileged to be able to present to you this first broadcast of a brand new year, our 18th year on the radio. Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? With Nick Griffin, the former member of European Parliament. I'm looking down at each segment we have with Nick tonight, looking at the topics that we have laid out. This is just going to be a fantastic first hour of our broadcasting year. And thankful to Nick for, as always, as he does, staying up a little bit past midnight London time to be with us. Nick, I want to ask you about the sequel to the great book that we promoted on this program a year ago, December of 2020. We're going to get to that. But before we pivot to that, let me ask you one more thing, politically speaking, and that is the question of Eric Zemmour. So this is a name that has come up on our radar quite recently because of his announced presidential candidacy in France. You perhaps have known a little bit more about him for some time. Is he the real deal? Is he someone to be excited about? And is, in fact, what he's saying more important than his candidacy?
He is certainly not the real deal in terms of, you know, a great white knight is going to save France. He's there as a hardcore Zionist to push for a clash of civilizations between us and Islam, which to a degree does exist, but not on the basis of it being good for France, on the basis of it being good for Israel and being good for the military-industrial complexes around the world. And
sounds
so on.
Like he's another second coming of Donald Trump almost.
Oh, he's much worse than Donald Trump. He's much, much worse than Donald Trump. Donald Trump, essentially, I think, was a businessman who didn't really understand. He understood aspects of getting elected, but didn't understand politics and the dirt of politics and really what goes on. Completely non-ideological, and hence tended to be, you know, washed one way or another by various advisors. But Zemmour is a different creature altogether. He's a hardcore Zionist. He's there to make sure that Marine Le Pen doesn't get elected more than anything else.
Okay.
And even Marine
right.
Le Pen ain't that good. I know her father very, very well. I know Marine quite well. She's a very, very clever, cynical politician. But she sold her father out to try and get a sniff of power. She'd certainly sell her grandmother immediately. No, people might get excited by Zemmour, but even if he were elected, it wouldn't change anything other than to push France even further towards the Zionist camp in worldwide affairs.
That is a very interesting answer, and you were the man to deliver it. So we covered Zemmour a month ago, I'd say. And, of course, I was excited by what he said. And, of course, we knew his antecedents, and we knew some of the other things that you mentioned. And the question I had was, though, is the fact that he's mentioning certain things, can any value be had of that? Just a quick answer to that. I think you've answered the other one with definitive authority. But can there be anything good from him injecting this racial consciousness to an extent that France is white and Christian at its core? Is there any value in that that sort of transcends his candidacy that we can sort of take for ourselves?
There is a value in that, really, if you're French, especially if you live in the cities and you haven't yet woken up and you have to have some distant politician tell you it's all going to hell in a handcart, you must be pretty stupid. But some people are pretty stupid, and it's a good thing to have these issues raised. You won't change the minds of the old people, you might frighten them a bit, but it'll make some young people, I think, understand quicker the fact that the old France that they knew, you know, is gone forever, and that they need to get on, as we were saying before the first break. And as one of those adverts said, actually, your adverts are a huge breath of fresh air. But the one there which was saying the solution to everything is to fall in love, get married and have children. Absolutely wonderful. Fantastic stuff. And I know a lot of French, especially French Catholics, are heading in that direction very, very rapidly. And the more they understand that the old France that their grandparents knew and loved really is gone, the quicker they understand that, the quicker they'll knuckle down to, in their own local areas, building something which will survive the inevitable collapse that's coming.
Well, I'm beginning to see a pattern developing between Marine Le Pen, Eric Zemmour, and Donald Trump. And one is that none of those people seem to be willing to touch the third rail, even obliquely, of Jewish power and influence. You know, they said that if Bill Clinton was our first black president in the United States, Donald Trump was our first Jewish president. And I've seen that Marine Le Pen attended some type of Zionist conference in Warsaw recently and seems to be trying to moderate her views or deflect criticism that she's anti-Semitic. And then Eric Zemmour is the real deal. He is, you know, a Jewish Zionist.
Well, and then again, you know, I'd say, too, with Trump, his act was refreshing with regards to the media. There were some things we could take from Trump. I think largely he sort of radicalized the Republican base, which is a value. We will take value wherever we can get it. And I really did want to pivot before now. But Nick, by all means, respond to what Keith said, and we'll talk a little bit more about this book.
I'd say just one thing on Trump, that for all his failings and the great disappointment that people had, he kept America out of stupid, crazy foreign wars. And he was under immense pressure to take America into war, into the Middle East especially, also against China. And he ducked and he dived and he threw some missiles Syria's way and so on. But he told the Russians they were coming. They did no harm. He kept America out of stupid wars. That means that there's a number of American families, an unknown family, who still got their boys and their girls in the services instead of having them home in caskets. And for that alone,
there's one other thing too. Let me just say this about Trump. Trump also revived our economy, and he did it because he either repealed or just ignored all sorts of regulations that were holding it back.
All right, let's, and yes, there was value that Trump, perhaps even inadvertently, I voted for him twice, so look, you know, I'll admit that, and I think that, you know, I'm glad that I did, okay, but, and there's value that we can take from him, whether it was intentional or inadvertent, that I think we're building on today here in America with regards to normal people waking up to some sort of a racial consciousness. Now, we may have to carry this over to the next segment, but a year ago, in December of 2020, we promoted a book, Deus Vult, that became the most popular fundraising incentive that we've ever offered, and for good reason. There is a new book out, a sequel, if you will, and we will promote that again in the spring coming up. I think there is a yearning for a muscular and masculine strain of Christianity that you, Nick, possess, and that Jim Dawson possesses, that people are really wanting. Tell us a little bit more about this book, and again, we'll follow this over in the next segment.
Well, this is Deus Vult, The Great Reset Resistance. And so it's the second of a trilogy. And while the first one looked really at the problem of the Great Replacement and questions demographics, this one really homes in on the Great Reset. And the first two chapters are about, well, the first one's about what the Great Reset really is, who's behind it. So it's the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, all the rest of the elite criminals. The second chapter is about the very close connection between the COVID scandemic and the climate change hoax. And then the whole of the rest of the book, because we thought by the time this book really starts to get into popular consciousness and sells, and by the time the public really realize that the Great Reset and the COVID thing is a serious problem, by the time that happens, people will mostly understand the problem. And what they need really is a book which goes into the answers. So all the rest of the chapters are, one way or another, something about the answers, what the ordinary man and woman can do to be part of the Great Reset resistance. So it looks at the sufferings of the early Christian martyrs and so on in order to put the problems that we face if we refuse to have a vaccine and so on into some sort of real context. You know, losing your job is not like being burned at the stake. It ain't that bad. And then it looks at other peoples, the Irish Catholics, the Scottish Covenanters, and so on, and how they resisted persecution. It's got a fascinating and vital chapter about, so we'd better come back to it after the break, hadn't we?
An old pro he is. He heard the music and he knows what that means here on commercial talk radio. But yes, and indeed we will, folks, because this is a very important book. We're going to talk about it a little bit more. And we're going to share with you one of the most iconic speeches I've ever heard an elected official give. Going back,
second only to George Wallace's inauguration.
I don't know if it's second to that. I don't know that. We'll be right back with it.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Florida, New York, and California are leading the way in new coronavirus cases in the U.S. as the country moved past a daily average of more than 300,000 per day, according to figures from the CDC. The highly contagious Omicron variant of COVID-19 is being blamed for the dramatic rise in recent cases. The CDC recorded its biggest jump in the current trend between December 26th and 27th. Since that day, the U.S. has averaged more than 400,000 daily coronavirus cases, which has also sent the seven-day average soaring. World leaders are sending out New Year's Day messages. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden sent out a New Year's Eve message on ABC TV.
Happy New Year, America.
From our family to yours, we wish you peace, joy, and good health in the year ahead.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. John and Chelsea Jubilee with Energized Health are regular guests on my show, sharing their breakthrough science of intercellular hydration. They help people burn fat fast, supercharge their energy, boost their immune system, reverse ailments and diseases with no painful exercises and no restrictive fad diets. I'm Exhibit A. I've been on the program for over a year now. During the first 88 days, I lost 25 pounds of inner body fat and I gained 10 pounds of muscle, and I've never gained the fat or weight back. I look and feel great. Everywhere I go, people tell me I look 10 years younger. Right now, John and Chelsea are giving my fans a special Christmas gift, and they've extended this special through this week. Energized Health will pay for your spouse's transformation. Sign up now and you'll get the WAR 40% discount, and your spouse is free. Go now to energizedhealth.com or call 888-444-8895. 40% off for you. Your spouse is free. 888-444-8895. energizedhealth.com.
Around 4,500 New Year's Day flights were canceled, including 2,500 affecting the United States, as air carriers continue to struggle with COVID-19 and the winter holiday weather. The most affected U.S. carriers were, in order, Southwest, SkyWest, American, Delta, and United. The majority of the U.S. cancellations were from Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. Many of them were delayed due to the New Year's Day snowstorm. The city received 9 inches of snow over the holiday. With more than 12,000 flights canceled since Christmas, the holiday travel season has been thrown into turmoil by the Omicron variant of COVID-19. The FAA warned that an increased number of its own employees are testing positive for the virus, which may result in forced reductions in traffic volumes to maintain adequate oversight and safety. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
You know, it's a little bit odd now after a month of playing Christmas music coming in from our commercial breaks to not having that anymore in the package. Of course, we wrapped that all up last week. In our third and final hour, we actually broadcast on Christmas night, December the 25th, and our last guest of the year was Pastor Brett McAtee, who is the pastor of a sure enough brick-and-mortar church in Michigan, and he presented to us the biblical accounting of the birth of Christ.
Well, you know that Christmas isn't really over yet, though.
Well, that's right. The 12 days of Christmas, as you remind me every year, Keith, and rightly so, but nevertheless, the Christmas music playing on this program is over until next December. But anyway, that's what we're talking with Nick Griffin about, and a masculine Christian. You don't find them so often here in the United States anymore. They do exist, of course. They're just not at the head table of any denomination, and perhaps that's true of Europe as well. But you do have sure enough Christians who are not ashamed of their patrimony. And we have one with Nick Griffin. We have one with Jim Dawson when he's on. And they have collaborated, of course, on this book series, the Deus Vult book series, last December of 2020 now. It was the most popular fundraising incentive we ever offered. And there is a sequel out. Nick was talking about it. Just a little more information about that, Nick, before we go on to the next topic. And how people can get it, of course.
Indeed so. Well, I hope you'll put the link in your show information there, and so I won't mention that yet a while. We'll come back to that. I know Jim Dawson's a very popular man amongst your regular audience. He's written for this book a tremendous chapter called The Dispensationalist Heresy, which really takes apart from a very Christian, fundamentalist Christian perspective, the dispensationalist problem and Christian Zionism. Really, really seminal piece of work. You mentioned muscular Christians and perhaps what's happening in Europe. Well, there's one man stands above all the others at present in terms of the clerical resistance to the COVID pandemic, and that is, of course, Archbishop Vigano, the Italian who was the former papal legate to the United States. An absolutely wonderful man. We've got a selection of his writings in this book. And then the remaining chapters are really about the theory of civil resistance and how civil resistance and just separating from the state, moving away from accepting the power of the state and getting on with your own lives, how this can really take place in a practical way. If I could beg your indulgence to read you two short paragraphs from one of the chapters. This is Resolve Only to Be Free. And this is near the end of it. And it's just give you a flavor of it. And we're talking about the problem, of course, of what the liberals are doing to us. And then this is the hopeful bit. With a birth rate that makes the giant panda look fertile, the liberals are committing genetic suicide at the same time as imposing economic and cultural harikiri on the people and economic system that has supported their ghastly experiment in social engineering. Their time will pass. Our job is to ensure that our ethnic and cultural identity survives their time, while quietly building the cadre of future revolutionaries who will lead the popular resistance to the liberal technocracy. There you go.
That's fantastic. That's in this book. It's brilliant, and ladies and gentlemen, we are going to offer this. I'll go ahead and tell you, we just wrapped up our Christmas fundraising drive, but when we have the first quarter fundraising drive of 2022, that'll come up in March, this is going to be the incentive. So we're going to buy a bunch of these books. We're going to offer them off to our contributors, and we will have both Nick and Reverend Dawson back on the show in March during our March Around the World series, where we feature different leaders of European nations, both in the theological realm, the elected official realm, and other ways as well. We'll have them back on to talk about this to a greater extent, but I certainly wanted to make mention of it tonight when we had the opportunity to talk with Nick. Now, talking with Nick, that's a big thing. You know, people, if you're tuning in for the first time, Nick Griffin wasn't elected mayor of some picturesque bucolic London town. He was a member of European Parliament. I mean, he went right into the belly of the beast. And in doing so, he did a lot of great things. But the one thing that I asked him to send back to me, we've played this before, but it's worth playing again. It is the most incredible speech that I have heard from a high-level elected official since Alabama Governor George Wallace in the 1960s. But it perhaps even meets or exceeds anything Governor Wallace was able to do. We're going to play this in two parts. We're going to play the first part right now. Listen to this. This is Nick Griffin, as a member of European Parliament, addressing the European Parliament from the very floor of that governing body. Hang on.
...of the European Union, Richard Kutanov-Kalergi, published the plan for a united Europe and the ethnocide of the peoples of Europe. The encouragement of mass non-white immigration was central to the plot. Since then, an unholy alliance of leftists, capitalists, and Zionist supremacists has schemed to promote immigration and miscegenation with the deliberate aim of breeding us out of existence in our own homelands. As indigenous resistance to this human genetic modification industry grows, the criminal elite seeks new ways to camouflage their project. First, their immigrant pawns were temporary guest workers. Then it was a multiracial experiment. Then they were refugees. Then the answer to a shrinking population. Different excuses, different lies. And asylum is just another one. But the real aim stays the same. The biggest genocide in human history. The final solution of the Christian European problem. This crime demands a new set of Nuremberg trials, and you people will be in the dock.
That is one of the most incredible things I have ever heard a high-level elected official say, or an elected official of any level say, to be frank. He is addressing his fellow members of the European Parliament, that is Nick Griffin. Nick, listen, we got excited a couple of weeks ago when the governor of Florida mentioned the term anti-white to describe the parade incident in Wisconsin where a black man allegedly ran over a bunch of white people. He just mentioned the word anti-white once in passing. Never in America, Donald Trump, anybody, have you heard anybody in decades speak like that. How in Europe is it possible for people to reach high-level positions? Obviously, it's very difficult, but you would never hear that here. What's the difference?
The key difference is that those elections to the European Parliament, when Britain was in the EU, but over the whole of Europe, the elections are via proportional representation, which means that you can get elected to the Parliament if you only have something, it depends on the area or the country you're in, but basically something, well, as little as 1% of the vote in Italy will get you elected. You get one MEP elected for that. I was elected on, 8% of the vote over a vast area of the northwest of England. So if we had the old-fashioned, the standard first past the post, then basically you would still not have had a single nationalist politician elected anywhere in Europe outside of local government. It's because of proportional representation that it is possible to get elected. Doesn't mean you've got power, but it at least gives you a platform sometimes from which to speak and help to wake people up.
Well, it was a powerful thing to say, and again, we haven't heard any elected official in this continent speak that way since the 1960s. Keith, we watched that before we had Nick on, just a few minutes before we went live tonight, and we've heard it before, but you can't hear it enough. Just to hear it again, what do you think?
Well, the last thing he said just struck a nerve with me, basically turning Nuremberg back on the head of those who were responsible for the Nuremberg trials. You could be tried like this too and should be tried because what you're proposing as a genocide makes anything that happened in Germany or in German-occupied Europe pale by comparison to what they're trying to do now.
Yeah, absolutely so. Of course, the only problem with the Nuremberg II idea, whether it's for the anti-white genocide that's going on or for the COVID scandemic crimes, is that in order to have a Nuremberg II, you first have to have a war, and you have to emerge as the victors, because Nuremberg I was victor's justice.
There's the rub, is it not? Which, of
There's
course, as we're all fathers here, all right? And we're all fathers here, and yes. I don't want my children to have to face such hardships, and I certainly don't want them to have to face such hardships after I'm gone, where I'm not there to protect them. None of us want these things. None of us wish for these things. But as realists, we have to understand that, of course, there's always that possibility.
Well, see, Nuremberg.
I'd say it's not a possibility. It's a certainty. We're looking at certainty. It's not that we're going to be the ones running the revolution. It's always possible that might happen. If we organize for it, prepare for it, if we pray, if we work, it might happen. But quite possibly it'll be our grandchildren or their children who will have the final revolution and will begin the rebuilding. This is a multi-generational struggle. And that's why being fathers is so important.
People in America are already seceding. People talk about a secession movement. People are doing it on an individual basis. White people are moving out of the urban centers into the rural areas, for example. And it's, secession is something that is, you know, it doesn't matter who's behind it. It's something that people instinctively do
and of course,
faced with these type of challenges.
It's a little bit easier in a place as broad and as vast as the United States to be able to continue to run and kick the can down the road for another 10 or 20 years. In Europe, of course, it's a lot more compact. It's not as easy to do that. But I think Nick's right. I think this is something that it's probably going to come to a head in the subsequent generation or two. We do our part. We do our duty. But we fight for our past, present, and future as well. And that's why we're here. We'll be right back. One more segment with the great Nick Griffin.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Decades after Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden picked up where he left off. With America surrendering to terrorists, Biden's foolish spending is causing inflation, which means more pain at the pump, higher prices on groceries, devaluing your retirement savings when you need it most. Once was a mistake. Twice is a disaster. America needs strong leaders, not weak ones. Save America JFC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
How do you know your child loves you?
When he calls and he says, Dad, why don't we go fishing? Just very simple, but it really counts.
They make a song up and they come into our bedroom and say, we made a song and will you listen to
it? Our next oldest daughter came to me with tears in her eyes and she said, Daddy, I just thank you for coming home every night when we were growing
up. My son does the nicest things. When he's playing outside, he'll come in and just give me a hug and run right back outside.
My daughter goes to the same high school that I'm the registrar at, and I'll go into my office after the bell has rung, and there's a note on my desk. And it'll usually say, Mom, I love you. I'm thinking about you.
And I think of my boy that we finally got him through graduation, and he came up to me and said, I made it. Thanks.
Family. Isn't it about time?
That's all I said. And that meant everything to me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Griffin may certainly be our featured guest of this, our first broadcast of the new year, but he is by no means the only one. No, Coming up in the second and third hours tonight, we're going to have a quartet of mainstay guests who are going to be offering their predictions and resolutions for the coming year. A great cross-section of our usual suspects here on TPC, and we look forward to getting to each and every one of them as the program rolls on. It's an action-packed, power-packed broadcast here on January the 1st of 2022. So we're going to get all of Nick's contact information, the organizations he's working with now. There's still a lot more information to be had there with regard to the work he's doing with the Templars. And again, we'll get to that in just a moment. But I want to first play the second part of his what you heard from that excerpt of his speech to the European Parliament. And he gets a little pushback, and it's interesting to hear what this individual says and how Nick responds to her. Here we go.
Mr. President, I'm really ashamed of the racist and xenophobic terms that were used by Mr. Griffin. And my only question to him is if he's there to make any concrete suggestions and amendments to the legislation. Is your policy serious, or are you just shouting? And I hope you will not be re-elected if you seek re-election, because it's a shame for this parliament, the kind of statements you have just made.
Mr. Griffin.
It's you that's shouting, because obviously the truth hurts. Yes, I will be seeking re-election. Yes, I hope to return here to speak up for the indigenous Europeans, which the founder of this place has deliberately set out to wipe out, because that is a crime. I'm telling the truth. I have a constructive suggestion to help those poor asylum seekers from Africa. Yes, make it clear they can't come here, so they don't try to cross the sea and drown in huge numbers. The best way for them is to get the banks off the backs of their countries so they can live in peace in their countries, and we Europeans can live in peace in ours. Thank you.
Bravo, my friend. What more can I say to that than bravo and thank you?
Well, there's one big advantage, actually, when you're speaking in the European Parliament. As you'll have noticed, and your regular listeners will have noticed, I do tend to go on a bit. I waffle a bit. But when you're speaking in the Parliament, you have a ration. You have either 60 seconds or very occasionally 90 seconds in which to speak. And that's your ration. That's all you're allowed. And it really concentrates the mind. And when you have to have a speech like that, you know, 60 seconds, well, then every word's got to count. It's a great discipline.
Well, here's to making it count. Am I right, Keith Alexander? And certainly Nick did that. And so,
well, as we say here in the South, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. And you certainly did it that time.
That's right. Well, indeed and for sure. So, Nick, what's next for
Nick
Griffin?
By the way, James, one more thing on that, just to tell you that the woman there who was literally shouting at me while she was running the common purpose train thing that only you accuse your opponents of shouting, that she is every bit as fat and ugly and hideous and evil looking as you would expect from a socialist woman.
Well, I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is radio, not television, of course. You couldn't see what I just saw here in the studio. We're going to post that to our website. We're going to post that.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of. I said, you know, a woman like that is not like a stack of used tires. She is a stack of used tires, because like a stack of used tires, you can't sell her. You can't even give her away. You got to pay somebody to haul her off.
Well, how about the freight train?
And I thought you saw that as was chivalrous.
Well, you have to draw the line somewhere.
And it has to be deserved. It has to be deserved and earned. Yes, indeed. Exceptions to every rule, for sure. But, okay, well, I was going to say, and I'll say again, what you just heard, we played a little bit of it in the previous segment, a little bit more just then. We're going to post the whole thing, the video, at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week, so you'll be able to take a look at that and save it for future reference. And it was just a fantastic comment from an elected official. We want more people like that. So, Nick, what's next for Nick Griffin? Who are you working with now? You know, I was looking back, I should say very quickly, if you don't mind, our first show of last year, a year ago this week, and we had a great show with Lauren Witzke, who was a former Republican nominee for the United States Senate out of Delaware. Now, she didn't win, but she was pushing the issue on some of these topics as well, and was not afraid to use the W word, white. And we also had one of your colleagues, I think, Sasha Roschmuller. So tell us a little bit more about the people you're working with now, the organizations in Europe that people should be familiar with, and how we can get more information on them.
Well, I'm working with the Templars, the idea that the Knights Templar, immediately people think, oh, is that something Masonic? Let me say, no, we are absolutely not Masonic. Masonry is part of the origins of liberalism. It's part of the origins of all our problems. So we're not Masonic, but we are Templars, and we take a genuine oath and so on, and we stand by our brothers and our sisters. If you want to know more, have a look at ktorder.com. I work in Europe, especially with Europa Terra Nostra, which is Sasha Roschmuller and many others, some really good people there in a number of countries spread all over Europe. You can hear me. I do a weekly show now, 6 o'clock London time, every Tuesday, on purged.tv. Purged as in everyone on it has been purged from YouTube and so on. So Purged TV, we're on there 5 days a week, either as a Templar show, and I do one of them, and I usually appear on another, generally on a Thursday or a Friday. And then Brother Dowson does his fantastic sermons on a Sunday. So we're always there. Also working very closely with Jada Franson from the British Freedom Party. You ask sort of what's coming up for Nick Griffin and what are we working on. Over the next few weeks, we're launching a really, really big push to get several different organizations really working together so that we're going to be going to all the big, and they're now massive, demonstrations against the lockdowns, against the fourth jabs, against the whole of the COVID Great Reset poison. And there's literally thousands of newly awakened people coming to these things, including a very large number of Christians. It's quite remarkable how rapidly a real sort of decent traditional Christianity is spreading through the ranks of those who oppose the government and the elite projects. And we're going to be going to those people with leaflets and, in fact, newspapers to try and bring them in from just being scared, frightened and angry opponents of the Great Reset and of lockdowns and so on, and really inform them of what's going on and bring them into a proper movement.
Well, Nick, we've always said at this show that liberalism is the modern face of evil and that liberal Christianity is an oxymoron, okay? And I think that's really what we've always worked on. Basically, if people will get in touch with their Christian heritage, they'll know immediately that everything that is being proposed by the left, like transgenderism, homosexual marriage, things like this, you know, it's pretty obvious to find out which side of the spectrum they're on, and they're on the anti-Christian and the pro-badness side of the scale. And, you know, America, for example, right now is making a complete and total laughingstock of itself with our new four-star admiral, Rachel Levine, the cross-dressing Jewish person that is Biden has made. I know that's really scaring the bejeebers out of the Russians and the Chinese right now.
Yeah, absolutely so.
Well, Nick, I tell you, you mentioned a lot there a moment ago, a lot of individuals and organizations that we could have spent a whole hour promoting. Jada Franson, a very interesting individual. ETN, though, you know, Europa Terra Nostra, I looked into it after you had mentioned it on a previous appearance, and I immediately saw that my old friend Dan Erickson had a hand in its leadership, and Dan and I go back many, many years, as do you and I. I instantly just joined on the spot. I'm a card-carrying member of ETN.
Wonderful.
And proud
good
to be
you.
So. I don't mind saying that. And so, of course, you're doing great work with them and across the board with these different organizations that you associate yourself with. I would have loved to have talked with you more about COVID tonight and what's going on in Europe and this madness, this utter madness. But we will perhaps save that then, my friend, for March. We would love to have both you and Jim back in March to talk more about the book again. We're going to be promoting that as our spring fundraiser. Hey, if we do half as well in getting these out as we did back last year, we're going to do great. And people really, really loved it, and for good reason. We'll focus on that a little more thoroughly, and I'd love to talk to you, but we'll see what's going on in Europe in March with regard to COVID. Things can and will change between now and then. We'd love to have you back on in March, but until then, the final word this hour is yours.
Well, I was struck by a thing that Keith said a little while ago about, you know, how the movement for secession is growing, and how it's not just about a political secession by, say, a state from the United States. It's also an individual. It's a personal, it's a family secession. And I think really the final word here should come from the Bible. And there's two little passages which absolutely speak to our time and people like us. There's 2 Corinthians 6:17, "Wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." Or in Revelation, you've got, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues." And those two pieces speak absolutely to us. And every single person listening to this should think about, yeah, how can I organize my life, my family life, my community life, whatever it is, the lives of my friends and so on. How can we find small ways in which to incrementally separate ourselves from the liberal Titanic before it sinks?
Well, like someone, I heard a radio pastor say that if American Western Europe aren't judged by God, God owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology.
Well, in those places there was not one righteous man. We have at least that many on the show tonight, and that's Nick Griffin. I think we have three, to be honest with you. There are more than that, but Nick, thank you for showing us the way. Thank you for ending the first hour of this first show of the year with a quote from the scriptures. We will talk to you again soon. God bless and Godspeed. The next 2 hours coming your way next, ladies and gentlemen. Nick Griffin, everybody.